everybody. Welcome to a show. We're going to do a little book review of sorts today, is the plan. Because I read a doozy. Some of you might remember that last year sometime I read a book novelization of the little book Mega Man 2. And this year I read a novelization of the game Castlevania 2. Why are they all twos? And are they 2 stars out of 5? Find out more as we go on. That would be normally a great place to insert some kind of like interstitial music, you know? Oh, that's the big tease. But I'm not really sure that me talking about a Castlevania book warrants, ooh, stay tuned, you know. Someone's going to be listening to this and say, oh yeah, well, I would be a fool to turn away from hearing about what someone thought of a Castlevania book. Not an opportunity does not come like this every day. Which is true. I don't think you're likely to every day come across somebody who's actually read a book about Castlevania, let alone someone who has opinions about a book about Castlevania. But you are that lucky today, number one. And number two, well, sometimes something doesn't come along every day. That doesn't mean it's good. So this could be instructive in a couple different ways. Could be instructive about Castlevania, about novelizations of video games, and also it could be very instructive in terms of scarcity not equaling goodity. So here we go. Castlevania. So for those of you who don't know, very quickly, Castlevania is a Nintendo game from the Nintendo Entertainment System, which is basically the thing that everyone had in the 80s and the 90s. Castlevania was a real good idea. It's like a horror game, and basically, you fight through this haunted areas and work your way up to Dracula's castle and then kill Dracula. And along the way, the other bosses are things like Frankenstein. And before you say anything, I know that it's Frankenstein's monster. And I say, fuck that. I call it Frankenstein. You know why? Because everyone calls it Frankenstein. Because Frankenstein is enough syllables without adding creature or monster or creation or, you know. Also, when you call it Frankenstein's monster, that's you putting that monster label, buddy. Not me. I think he was trapped in a world he never made. Much like another creature, Howard the Duck. So, you fight these different creatures as you go through Castlevania, and then you beat up Dracula, and then you beat the game. So, you know, it's kind of like if you had a game that was themed like Halloween, basically. Like skeletons all over the place, bats, these fucking Medusa heads that knock you into the ground over and over. Here's the thing about Castlevania, too, why it's kind of like a horror game, I think. You play a game like Super Mario, right? And, you know, there are these little physics things in Super Mario that make Mario definitely extra human, right? Like, he can jump, like, 15 feet in the air. I mean, it's not crazy. That wouldn't be the wildest thing of all time if someone jumped 15 feet in the air, right? But in Castlevania, it seems like the guy can jump about 3 feet in the air, or maybe 5. In other words, it seems like, I guess like a real fit dude could jump and walk this much. There's no running. You cannot run. You just have to walk. So that's more realistic, because he's like, fuck you, I have to go like 100 miles in this goddamn game. I am not running. He also, probably the biggest obstacle in the game is stairs. So whenever you come upon stairs, that can be a challenging trap, basically. I will go ahead and call it a trap. So he's a very regular human, and I think that makes it a little more horrifying, to be perfectly honest, because it's a little bit more like you are in the game. Like, how would, if I was in Mario, how would I fare? Which I'm so glad I brought that up, because that ties directly into what happens in this book. Now here's the thing, before we really talk about this book, I wanted to say, it's easy to dismiss this and just be like, well, it's a kid's book, of course it sucks ass. and I'm kind of with that. You know, I don't know. I don't judge a kid's book the same way as I judge an adult book. There's someone who commented on a book review I did one time, and basically I said, I think it was a kid's book. I can't remember. It must have been a kid's book, though. And they were like, oh, you rated that too hard because it accomplished the goals and it's just a kid's book. And I was like, that's true. And if I was, you know, rating kid's books, I would rate this lower. If I was like, hey, I'm a kid's book rater. Compared to other kid's books, this book is great. But I don't really read kid's books. So if I'm reading and rating a kid's book, there's a damn good reason. And the people who pay attention, you know, the three people who follow reviews that I do, aren't, if they see that I rate a kid's book high, they're going to think, this must be a pretty good book. And then if they read it and it's just good for a kid's book, they're going to be like, what the fuck? This guy lied. I'm not above lying in a Goodreads review. God knows. But, you know, that's just not how I do things. Number one. Number two, however, in the case of Castlevania, and so far the two books I've read in the Nintendo Worlds of Power series. Now, I found out a little fact about these. They're all written by FX9. F.X. the number 9. Not the numeral, not the digit, but N-I-N-E, right? So obviously a fake name. And it turns out that this is just a pen name used by a bunch of different authors. And basically this whole project was conceived by none other than Seth Godin. So if you don't know who Seth Godin is, he's this, like, one of these pop business assholes who I think has good ideas. He takes a good idea that's probably a 10-minute explanation and stretches it into a whole book so that people will buy it. Also, I do blame him and his ilk for kind of ruining the world of work, because what happens is, like, every 8 months, one of these assholes comes out with a new book, and now we're going by, you know, oh, let's do the Icarus effect system, or let's do the start with Y system. And then basically, everyone's got a huge thing for some new stupid system for, like, 8 months, and then a new pop business book comes out, and we all go with that. And it just cycles like that forever. Is it their fault that we picked these? I don't know. I can't even do the thing I do where I ask a series of questions like, is it their fault? And is it their fault that they... Because I just am pissed off about it. I just hate it. So anyway, Seth Godin is the one who kind of came up with this whole scheme of creating these Nintendo books. Which makes sense as a scheme. Right? It's easy to see why, because you'd say, all right, it's like 1990, every kid's playing fucking Nintendo, every parent wants their kid to read a book, what's a book that we could get kids and parents to agree on? Kids love it, and moms like it too. Well, if we did Nintendo books, maybe that'll do it. The problem I have is not that they wrote crappy Nintendo books for kids, because let's face it, these were not going to turn out cool. They were not going to turn out to be amazing. They were not going to turn out to be even passable adult reads, right? Or kid, even as a kid, I wouldn't have liked it. And that's part of the problem. But the main problem I have with this whole thing is, like, it's clearly just a cash grab. It was clearly just some asshole was thinking, I could make some cash by writing some shitty books. It would take no effort. The books are, like, I don't know, 20,000 words or something. It would take me no time, no effort, and I'll make some money. That's what I don't like about it. And, you know, at that time, I think if you wanted to do that with video games, it was totally acceptable. They still write novelizations of video game stuff, but I don't know. They seem more legit. It's hard to say. Anyway. So they wrote a novelization of Castlevania 2. Now, the story of Castlevania 2... So you finish Castlevania 1, you beat Dracula, right? Then what I guess happened is, you know, Dracula's body is there, and his body parts all kind of fly away and separate themselves. And what you, the hero, were supposed to have done was kill Dracula and then, like, use this special oil and burn his body parts because, you know, all this stuff is just weird occult crap. And you didn't do that because you're dumb. And so now the story of Castlevania 2 is you have to collect these body parts of Dracula, reconstitute him, defeat him again, and then dispose of him properly. So what they did is they made a new Castlevania game, and what they decided to do was up the ante by adding some elements that are horrible. They added a bunch of stuff into the game that is just super annoying and super dumb. You know, there's a day-night cycle that seems to have no real purpose. And there are a lot of things in the game that you would never be able to figure out in a billion years on your own. For those of you who aren't like Nintendo fanatics, I'll let you in on a little secret. There was kind of a time where Nintendo had a side business of basically troubleshooting their own games. So, for example, they came out with Nintendo Power Magazine, which was a pretty great magazine. But how do you sell subscriptions to Nintendo Power Magazine? Well, if you're diabolical, what you do is come out with a whole series of games that are impenetrable from the information within the game. Keep in mind, this is before the days that you could get online and just have some guy, you know, with a username like Simon's Curse 007-69420 walk you through the whole game. They also had like a tip line you could call, and they had game counselors who would give you tips and secrets and help you through tough spots and shit. And, you know, this was like a 900 number, I believe, that you would call and then, you know, you would get through the parts. So Nintendo almost had this thing, and there's kind of a lot of talk about certain Nintendo games basically being super obtuse for the direct purpose of making it difficult to beat them without getting some kind of help resource. Is Castlevania 2 one of those? Almost certainly. I think issue 2, if I remember correctly, of Nintendo Power features Dracula, or Castlevania 2, on the cover, and it's Simon Belmont holding Dracula's head, and it's horrifying and great. So, there you go. Castlevania 2 the game. Now let's talk about the book. Okay. I see a lot of potential here, right? I mean, the story of going through this haunted land, coming across horrifying creatures, defeating them, putting Dracula's body back together, defeating him again. That's a pretty solid story, right? That's a premise. There's a premise there, at least. And basically, it's like, any universal monster you want, or any, just walk through the Halloween aisle at fucking Party America, find some stuff, and turn that into a thing. You also had, in the game, to add to the premise, you would go to these villages, and these, like, villagers would tell you things. Like, they were supposed to give you hints, but some of the hints were just not helpful. And some of the hints were actually incorrect. And they made them that way on purpose. There's a guy out there who hacked the game and replaced the hints the townspeople give you with actual hints that help you. And if you played that version of the game, you could actually finish the game without the outside help. So someone hacked it and made a functional version of the game, which is, that kind of tells you, right, how fucked up that was and how awesome this person was. So, you know, that plays a part in the book too, right? Like, you have to go, you have to uncover this mystery, and they're the people who live in Castlevania, which is apparently a country. They, you know, are under Dracula's influence, possibly, or are afraid of Dracula, so they don't want to say anything. So really, the story's got it all. Action, adventure, intrigue, mystery, people vying for power, Dracula, it's all in there. So how do we go about the book? How do we go through the book? Well, as we all know, anything that's written for kids needs to have a kid in it. This is a thing that they had when I was growing up that when I was a kid, I fucking hated, right? No matter what the story was, you had to find a way to integrate some kid. So, you know, you have the super friends, and it's like Superman and Aquaman and Wonder Woman and all these great characters. And then they have these dopey idiot kids and their dog that hangs out with them, too. Why do they need to be part of the super friends? How were these two elected to be part of the super friends? Where are their fucking parents? These kids are like 14 or something. you know, the one kid just like looks like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. And for some reason, he's a member of the Super Friends. And that means young Pete at home, rather than watching Superman fuck shit up, he has to watch these dumb kids solve some kind of mystery. That's the worst thing in the world. That's horrible. Or, let's see, Captain N. You know, that was the video game show, a terrible video game show where a kid gets sucked into the Nintendo and, you know, he becomes the hero of Nintendo Land or whatever. Every story, it seemed like they're like, throw in a kid sidekick because that's who kids can identify with. I mean, comic books were, like, notorious for doing this forever. I feel like, finally, we've gotten to where, you know, I saw the Avengers movie. I don't think there was, like, a little kid. They're like, if the Avengers movie had been in 1994, they would have a little kid sidekick. Guaranteed. They still do it from time to time. You know, if you watch that movie where Hugh Jackman has a robot friend who fights not the new one, but the old one. How the fuck did it happen that Hugh Jackman is not in not one, but two movies where he is a friend of the robot? You know what I mean? Like, he's been in sort of two modern-day short circuits. If he's a voice in WALL-E, I'm going to blow my fucking brains out, because that is too much man-on-robot friendliness for me. So that was a thing they did. So, of course, in Nintendo Worlds of Power, they do that too. In Mega Man, they do it by making Mega Man a real boy instead of a robot, which is dumb because they basically say, oh my god, my machine somehow turned you into a real boy. And rather than talk about, like, well, this has a lot of implications on what life is or something, what they do is just go like, huh, all right, well, let's not let that affect the story in any significant way other than every 20 pages, Mega Man says, like, oh yeah, don't forget, you can die. The end. So, in Castlevania, we start out with a dream. We don't know it's a dream, I guess, but it's like a paragraph of someone's fighting Dracula in his castle, and it's horrible and, you know, dramatic. And then the kid wakes up. You know, he wakes up from the it-was-all-a-dream sequence, which is really a nice way to start off your story. Especially when, you know, I don't know, towards the end of the story, the dream sequence becomes reality. And you're like, you could have just started with the reality sequence. Not only did you do the it was only a dream, you didn't even have to. You just, like, did it for the fucking hell of it, right? Just because you felt like it would be fun. So they, so you join our friend, Tim. Tim Bradley. Tim Bradley is your average Nintendo-loving teenager, right? He eats, sleeps, and breathes Nintendo. He just loves Nintendo, and his mom is always like, you and that Nintendo, I swear to God. Moms are the enemy, because they don't let you play Nintendo for 100 hours a week. Let me tell you something, moms of the 90s, your kids all grow up and then play Nintendo 100 hours a week. They just, as soon as you can't stop them, then they start doing it. So Tim Bradley is your average kid, except for he does have one little weird thing. He loves chocolate. And when I say he loves chocolate, I mean this in not a way of like, not a way you would think typical of a 15-year-old boy. I mean on a level of newspaper comic strip Kathy, when she's sort of like disguising that she's on her period, when they're doing like newspaper appropriate Kathy's on her period. Ag, just give me chocolate. Ack. Is that what she says? Ack. That is Kathy's cat. How the fuck did Kathy go so long? Who was reading Kathy? Like, who was reading that and being like, this is like the Sex and the City of the newspaper. God, I wonder if she'll get with Irving or not. And, well, it's beautifully drawn. Beautifully rendered. I mean, Kathy, that's... Does anyone remember a classic Kathy story? Was there ever a Kathy cartoon? There has to have been, right? because they did like Charlie Brown and Garfield and Dilbert and all that stuff. There has to be a Kathy. Why not? Oof, that's got to be the worst movie. I want to see a live-action Kathy starring... who's the superstar lady from SNL? That would be a great movie. If they really did, if they stayed as true to the material as possible, I think that would be really incredible. So anyway, Tim Bradley, average high school student, mom doesn't want him to play Nintendo, and he loves chocolate. I mean, he talks about chocolate throughout this entire fucking book. Okay, he's fighting monsters. He's in Castlevania inside of a video game. These are the factors that are going through one's mind the entire book. And the fact that Tim is like, I could really go for some chocolate right now. And this really, I really thought that they had like a Hershey's sponsorship. Because he's always talking about like a Hershey. He's, oh, I'm craving chocolate so bad right now I could eat a whole Hershey's Big Block. Which is like a king size or something. I looked it up and there's like an 80s picture of it. And it's just like, yeah, it's like a slightly larger Hershey's bar. And he's always talking about Hershey's Kisses and stuff. Although, there's one confusing part later where Dracula attempts to tempt him. And he does so with Godiva chocolate. So that's extra super confusing. Because Godiva, I learned, because I looked it up, is not related to the Hershey Company. So why would they put that as like the pinnacle of chocolate if Hershey is the sponsor? That makes no sense, right? You can't have two different brands and you're like, ooh, this one's the greatest of all time and not the one that paid for us. We've been talking about Hershey's this whole time, but now we're talking about Godiva for just a little bit because that's the pinnacle. Is it possible they got two different chocolate sponsors for this thing? But that should tell you, like, what 15-year-old boy is like, oh, Godiva's the best. I mean, they don't know. Hershey's the perfect chocolate when you're a 15-year-old boy. You don't give a fuck. So Tim goes to school after having his Castlevania dream. And, of course, he talks to a girl, you know, and he's nervous around girls, but it's okay. And as they're chatting, there was a part I really had a problem with where he was fantasizing about playing Double Dragon with her. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, at the end of Double Dragon, you beat the game. You're these two brothers. You beat up a bunch of guys. And at the end of the game, you have to fight the brother. You fight each other. So if you play two players, you have to beat each other up at the end. Which I was like, Tim, buddy, if you think you're so smart at video games and you want to take a girl to an arcade, which I guess already says something, Double Dragon is not the game to play together because at the end you're going to have to either beat her up or let her beat you up. That's, why would you do that? There are so many other games that don't involve that conflict, the meanest thing they've ever done in games. That was my big problem. So anyway, Tim talks to this girl. And she's like, hey, how about you take me shopping for video games? She wants to get some for her brother or her cousin or whatever, right? And he's like, yeah, totally. So then, of course, her big bully boyfriend comes and confronts Tim and is like, why are you talking to my girl? And he's like, oh, geez, I'm just taking her to the video game store, right? No big deal. And, like, this is a total thing in these 90s shows, too. They always had... like, the cute girl in school who was, like, sweet and nice and, like, the main character wanted to date and stuff, always had the biggest asshole boyfriend of all time. Like, that happened so much in shows and books and stuff that when it turned out to not be real, I was surprised. Because I think the real-life version of that is, like, I don't know, usually if someone's dating the biggest asshole in a school, they're kind of an asshole, too. Not always, but boy, does it seem to go that way. It seems unlikely that a girl who's like, oh, she's so sweet and kind, and she's asking loser Tim Bradley to go with her, you know, and says, great, it's a date to go out to the video game store. And then, you know, is like, oh, and this is my boyfriend who, you know, is a real shithead. Everyone hates. I don't know. I'm somehow oblivious to the fact that he's a complete bully dickhead shit. So the guy is going to beat up Tim Radley. And Tim somehow gets out of it by being like, hey, well, can I go to the bathroom before you beat me up? And the guy's like, I guess so. I wouldn't want you to pee your pants as I'm beating the shit out of you, which is like, what does he think he's going to do? Tim's going to like pull down his pants and just start pissing on him? By the way, if you're in eighth grade, that would probably work to get you out of a fight. If you're like, if someone's about to beat you up and you just started stripping your pants off and peeing, what are they going to do? They don't want to get hit with the pee. You're the craziest person in the school now. I think in school, that would be the equivalent of getting to jail and beating the shit out of somebody right away. Because basically, okay, your social life is over in school. That's for sure. But I don't know. I feel like people would stop messing with you because it's just, that's too crazy. You can't do anything about that. So Tim goes to the bathroom, and then Simon Belmont appears, hero of Castlevania, in the flesh. He's got all his stuff on. A guy comes into the bathroom, another guy, like a stoner, and is like, righteous dude, said a long-haired guy with leather pants just coming into the boys' room. Aren't you in Metallica or something? And then he's like, no, I'm from Castlevania. And the guy's like, right on, I have all your CDs. Which did, I was like, eh, Castlevania would be a great name for a metal group if it wasn't already what it is. So then Simon is like, Tim, we need your help. Come to Castlevania. This is the part that they never really figure out in these things. Why do they need this kid? Like, what? Simon Belmont has defeated Dracula before. He's going to do it again like 8 more times. Tim is good at video games. I mean, he's okay. And likes chocolate. He seems like the ideal guy. Like, you wouldn't, if you were from the land of Castlevania, wouldn't you look through the portal and be like, well, this guy's really good at Space Invaders. So maybe what we should do, though, is get like a jet pilot. Like, find the best jet pilot, because really, what this guy's going to be doing is a lot more like flying a jet than it is playing a game where you're flying a jet. That's the most asinine way to find someone who's, you know, correct for your land. And they didn't even go that way in this book. What they say is like, oh, we just found someone who is pure of heart or something. And that was you. Because what Tim's job is throughout the book is to help Simon Belmont resist Dracula possessing his body. So Dracula will try and possess him. And the way that Tim banishes Dracula is by telling him puns and bad jokes. You know, like, what's black and white and red all over? It's a newspaper, shit like that. And, you know, they tend to involve whatever situation they're in. So I do give credit to Tim for knowing this many bad jokes. But somehow those seem to depower Dracula when he's taking over Simon Belmont. Now, again, I don't know why that works or why that's important, except to show, like, Tim Bradley is kind of a goofball, and Simon Belmont, straight-laced, by-the-book type. He's a by-the-book vampire killer, right? No time for fooling around. So, you know, they both need to become a little bit more like them, like each other. Tim needs to become more like Simon and confront his bullies and not be afraid, and Simon needs to become more like Tim. You know what I mean? Not so serious all the time. Which, I argue, maybe not. Because I don't think Tim needs to try and beat the shit out of a bully, because that's a bad idea. I don't think Simon Belmont, who kills Dracula over and over, needs to become a jokester. Like, I don't think everyone needs to be funny in life, right? And not everyone needs to be deep. I think you can be a few different things and different levels of different things. But if you've got, like, other good skills, like killing Dracula, and you seem to be the only one in the world who can do it, who's going to be like, oh, that guy's kind of a stuffed shirt, huh? Yeah, fuck you! Well, he spent his whole life learning how to actually use a whip as a weapon, which seems impossible. Fine. You know, he didn't read a lot of joke books like Tim. So basically, they play through the game. They go to these mansions, they fight monsters. The monster fights are a little weird because Tim doesn't really do a whole lot. Like, Simon Belmont mostly fights the monsters. There's a pretty good moment where they find, you know, they have whips, like Simon Belmont. That's what he uses in Castlevania. Instead of a sword or whatever, he uses a whip. And there's a pretty good moment in the book because obviously what I'm thinking, even when I play the game and then later, is I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think a whip seems like a very practical weapon. Like, it just seems so hard to use, especially when you've seen a gun. But a sword seems a lot more effective, right? And you get these special weapons like axes and knives and stuff, and you're like, I don't know, man. I think you should just stick with that. But he uses the whip, and at some point, Tim gets a whip as well. And basically, he just knocks over a bunch of... Oh, I have it highlighted here. They're inside of a church, and there's like a monk guy watching them. Tim tried his thorn whip. All he managed to do was knock over a bunch of candles into a baptismal font. Their flames hissed out. Oh, said the voice of the brother, echoing with sarcasm through the church. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Tim wound the whip back up, grabbed his satchel, and raced after Simon. One of the best parts in the thing is this monk who, you know, when Tim tries the whip, as any of us would do, he basically just screws it all up. And I like that there was this monk just watching this happen. And from his perspective, he's like, really, you had to do that in here and knock over all these candles into this water. That's, thank you. Yeah, wonderful. So I nominate that monk as my favorite character from the book. He had the best line in the book. So anyway, they go through, they fight all the monsters. Here's the thing. For some reason, it seems to cut out most of the actual parts where they're fighting the monsters in favor of parts where they're just talking to people in the village or meeting a guy who has a crystal and he's negotiating with what is clearly a Jewish stereotype, by the way. Stuff like that. They do that in favor of having like action sequences where they're fighting these monsters, which seems bizarre to me. Isn't that, like, the whole point of the game, A and B? Isn't that, like, much more exciting? I don't know. It seems like an easy way to fill pages to me. But, yeah, and they fight one big monster, and there's a big monster where Tim, faces off with the monster because Simon is knocked out or something. And so Tim has to basically face off with the monster long enough for Simon to recover and then kill the monster. So, you know, he, like, tries to be intimidating and real, and also at the same time he beats his addiction to chocolate, which is great. This whole time he's carrying a bag. By the way, he packed a bag before he left his house, and he packed it with, you know, camping-type items and a shitload of chocolate. And then he loses his bag in quicksand, which is crazy, but also something that probably would happen in Castlevania, that there would be quicksand and you would lose all your items in it, so that's not super out of sorts. And finally, at the end of the game / book, Tim learns to confront his bullies, he beats his addiction to chocolate, and Simon even tells a joke or two, so everything is pretty great. And Simon and some lady are getting married. I don't know who the lady is. That doesn't really matter, right? And there's even a part where the lady brings, she's like, Tim, I found something that I think you might like, and it's a bar of chocolate. And Tim's like, oh, no thanks. It's a very nice gift, but sometimes it's nice to just be able to say no to something. You know, that's him learning his lesson of like, oh, moderation, you know, control. That stuff. So then they're done fighting everything in Castlevania. Everything is nice in Castlevania again. And it's time for Tim to go back to the regular world. You know, they have to send him through the magic portal. And he's like, well, can I stay here for a while? Can I hang out? All I saw of Castlevania was like horrible possessed monsters. And of course, as happens in most of these types of stories, they have some vague magical reason that they're like, no, you need to go back to your place. You know, and he's like, well, can you send me back to, like, my house instead of the bathroom where the bully's waiting outside? And they're like, of course not. You know, the magic doesn't work that way. It's magic. There are a lot of rules. This makes me crazy about books that have magic in them. I've been trying to figure out how to describe this, but what happens is any book or movie or whatever that has magic, you know, you have a show and it has Merlin in it, they constantly have to come up with stupid reasons that Merlin can't just use magic to fix everything. You know, so they'll have a bad guy who's like invincible to magic, and you're like, all right, fine. And then they'll be like, oh, well, it turns out if there's an eclipse, Merlin can't use magic. And like, they have to come up with, I feel like they just come up with a book and it's got 10 retarded reasons per episode that they can pick from. And it's like, well, here's why Merlin can't use magic this time. Because basically what you find out when you write a book is like, well, if you can use magic, you can just do whatever the fuck you want. That's why it's magic. If it wasn't magic, there would be no rules. But it's magic. That means breaking the rules. You know, so they can cross into this dimension that no one knew existed, Castlevania, and they can pull Tim into that dimension, and he can bring chocolate bars with him and go in quicksand with him. And what they cannot do is return him to a different time and place. That would be crazy. That would be impossible. So the probably the one other highlight of the book for me, they're sending Tim back, and they're like, all right, see you later. And he's like, bye. And then Tim is like walking through the portal. And I think it's Simon is like, you probably need to go ahead and leave that whip behind, you know? And Tim's like, ah, crap. He was just trying to sneak through the portal with the whip so that he could, I guess, come out of the bathroom and whip to death the bully who was waiting for him outside. Now, here's what's really weird about it, too. Oh, and also, Simon Belmont and this lady, who has nothing to do with anything, explained to Tim why, oh, you just need to be brave, and you don't need to beat him up. You know, I know that here in Castlevania, we just beat the shit out of our problems, and that works great, but that doesn't need to be the way. There's always another way. And he's like, you're right, you know, and then he tries to just walk through the thing with the whip. And they're like, probably leave the whip behind. And he's like, oh, God damn it. They busted me. And then he's back in the bathroom, and the bully's outside. End of book. So they don't even show him confronting the bully or, you know, using his newfound bravery to make this all work. That's just the end. You're just like, well, I assume everything went great. He went out there, and he talked this bully down somehow. Didn't eat chocolate anymore, worked on his grades, you know, played Castlevania, but in a more moderate way, stopped eating chocolate, and took What's-Her-Face to wherever on their dumb little date, the end. So that's the story of Castlevania. It basically incorporates a lot of the things I hated from the entertainment as a kid. I hated how they always had to put a kid in there. I hated how you couldn't have a book about Castlevania and have it be, like, serious. Like, when I was a kid, and I think a lot of other kids are this way, too, I understood that my things were frivolous and dumb, but I also was like, how come nothing can be serious? Like, nothing feels, no one can ever write a serious story about anything I care about. And I took myself seriously in a weird way as a kid. In such a way where I'm like, I want to read a story where they're, like, fighting Dracula and it's horrifying. That's what I wanted. But you can't have it. You're not allowed. That doesn't exist when you're a kid in the 90s. So it had that. I hated that. It had, like, a lesson at the end, a little, like, you know, just in case you didn't get the lesson of this, which is pretty explicit throughout the entire fucking book. Here it is spelled out for you. We're just going to say the lesson. The whole book has integrated throughout, had this lesson, and hasn't been super hidden about the way it says it. But just in case, we'll finish it off and say it completely explicitly laid out for you in a nice quotable. Finally, there are hints in the book for the game. I think I could have excused every other sin in this game if basically they said, like, look, if you get through this book and read this book, we'll tell you how to finish Castlevania 2. We will give you all the things you need to know to beat this game. They don't. Half the hints aren't even helpful. They're like stupid hints that aren't even hints. It's just like, oh, do this. And it's like, no fucking shit. How would I ever even play the game if I didn't do that? I wish that these books, at the very least, I could have excused so much more if they had just been like, well, we got kids to read, and we sold books. Okay, let's be serious. There was an economic factor. But we got kids to read by making this game that's basically impenetrable unless you read the novel that goes with it. I'd be like, well, kind of cheap, but okay. Because, you know, you could always get, like, if your friends read it or something, you don't all have to read it yourselves. You don't all have to buy it. You can kind of work it out that way. So I think it would have all been excusable if they'd done that one thing. And you know what? They didn't. They didn't do the one thing that would have totally made it work. And that is super fucking frustrating. Because they basically have no purpose other than to just fuck around. To just be like, eh, these are shit. We don't care. We don't care who reads them, and we don't care why. So I give Simon's Curse, Castlevania 2, the novelization, a none stars. Okay? Star none. Ranch. Thanks for listening to my book review, my long book summary / review. Hopefully it was a rewarding experience for you more than it was for me.